Well, hello, everyone. I'm Jill Bloom, group publisher of Roofing Contractor, Walls and Ceilings, and Building Enclosure. Thank you so much for joining us today for a very important conversation about cybersecurity. I was just been hearing a very high percentage of contractors say they really aren't concerned about cybersecurity, which makes me extremely nervous. So what I'm hearing now, I want to tell everybody, please pay close attention. And you might want to save these cybersecurity podcasts. I think you might need to listen to them a few times. There's a lot of information here. So Rick D'Amato, the editorial director of Roofing Contractor, and I are so honored to be here today with Brian Thornton, the CEO of ProWriters, Les Hicks, the president of Cardinal Technology Solutions, and Bill Collins, the director of national accounts at Servco LLC. Well, Brian, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about ProWriters and what are some things that contractors need to know?
Yeah, so we're a digital kind of wholesale firm that focus on cyber insurance specifically, as well as some other professional management lines. And so my background is over 20 years in the cyber insurance market, working on from Fortune 500 accounts down to startups. And so we kind of see every level of risk. And so, if I'm thinking about small businesses, specifically contractors, and what to be worried about, or as far as exposures in this space, you have traditional data breach exposures, you've got ransomware exposures and resulting kind of business interruption, downtime events, which we can talk about a little bit. And then you've got a lot of cyber crime elements. And certainly we see this a lot in these classes of business, contractors, construction related risks of invoice manipulation, where people get in, send invoices that are fraudulent and they end up getting paid and the company's out money. And usually that ties to kind of a business email compromise event where they've either spoofed somebody or they've impersonated somebody or they've gotten into the email system and manipulated an invoice for payment. So there's a lot of other exposures, but those are certainly key ones that we see, as well as then kind of that disruption in the entire supply chain, depending on the type of business.
Fabulous. And so tell me a little bit about your position at ProWriters as CEO and how did you get into the business?
Yeah, so our firm, we are kind of a different style setup in this space in that we work on behalf of multiple carriers. We assist retail brokers in shopping the coverage and making sure that they can get multiple options for their clients so that we can automatically kind of compare all the coverage. And it's really driven by the fact that over the past few years, as this exposure has grown and the demand for the product has grown, it was really inefficient for small businesses to get the right coverage. Right. So it was hard for them to get multiple options. And when you're talking about low premiums, maybe $1,000 or $2,000 for $1 million worth of coverage, for brokers and everybody alike, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of back and forth. And it's hard to spend large amounts of time on small business accounts. So it's making sure that we give them the expertise as well as the ability to kind of get multiple options, compare them for a client, and then easily show them here's all the differences in coverage. And here's kind of the one that we think might be the right fit for you, depending on what your needs are. And so that's the need we saw, and that's what we tend to be addressing.
Fabulous. Well, Rick, I'll turn it over to you because there is a lot to cover here with all of these three guys.
Yes, and thank you, Jill. I appreciate it. And thank you, Bill, Les, and Brian, and I appreciate all of you being here. And to our listeners and viewers, thanks for joining us today on what I think is a very important topic of cybersecurity, continuing our series. So, I'm going to just throw this out to whomever would like to address it. I want to review some of the things that we've looked at in the past just to sort of put a light on the issue for roofing contractors. Let's review some statistics we've talked about recently about small, medium businesses' exposure to being hacked. Since obviously roofing contractors are all small and medium businesses. Bill, could you address that?
Well, I think the general consensus, although there aren't perfect figures out there, is that there's about a 25 to 30% chance a small, medium-sized business in any 1 year is going to get hacked.
So all roofing contractors are subject to being hacked. Held up for ransom or whatever it happens to be. And so let me throw this next one to Les. What are some of the kind of the damages that small, medium businesses encounter when they're hacked?
So some of the things that can happen are, obviously there's downtime, you have to have some forensics time. The IT, whoever you're using for your IT, whether it's an internal department or outsourced, everything has to be shut down. You have to find the source of, where it came in at, if it was an infection, if it was a phishing scam, it was a spoofed email, where it came from, how much, where the data is at, what's damaged, the backups have to be restored. All of that takes time. It's a tremendous amount of time that has to be, applied to get everything back up and running normally. There's a lot of stuff there that can really damage a small company that can't afford to be down for very long.
And you got to pay for that time too.
Yeah, and I mean, it could take, and we've done it before. We restored servers before. Obviously not our clients, but I mean that some people that called us out of the blue and said, we need help. We found you on the internet. Can you help us? And we went in and it took about 18 hours, first of all their backups were compromised except for one. All of them they had been hit with an encryption virus. Every single backup that they had was toast. The only thing that saved them was they had a backup drive that was sitting on a shelf that was 2 weeks old. And that was our only option at the time. And so we rebuilt the server with that backup. And the data was 2 weeks old, but there was really nothing we could do for them at that point. I mean, and it's unfortunate, but they just didn't have any monitoring, of their backups, didn't have any idea if the backup was even being done every night. It was, but the backups were encrypted. So this type of virus that they got, it not only destroyed all the information in their servers, but it also jumped to their backup systems and destroyed all their backups as well.
Oh my. Well, in addition to all that fun, then there's ransom demands and other, exposure of your business data, like HIPAA data on your employees and sensitive business data on your clients, which is not good. So now, Brian, I want to turn to you and just, you have to talk to me like a two-year-old. I'm new to all this, and I want it at a fairly basic level. What is cyber insurance? Give us the sort of the elevator speech, and then I got a few questions to ask.
Yeah, so it's, cyber insurance is a product that's evolved over the last decade or so. It's really been around for more like 20 years, but it's now mainstream for small businesses. And what it does is kind of a holistic product. There's, if you break it down into kind of major coverage components, there's first party coverage and third party coverage. So if you think about a business that suffers a potential breach or an intrusion or an event, there's the forensics, and this kind of maps to some of what Les just said. You have the coverage for a forensics firm to come in and figure out what's potentially been accessed, whether you need to notify. So it would cover the cost to notify people, the credit monitoring that you need to offer, that we've all received those letters from different providers over the years ourselves individually. So you've got the credit monitoring coverage. You've got legal coverage. So you've got lawyers at your behest that will kind of advise you every step of the way. They'll manage the kind of potential notification to regulatory bodies, potential fines and penalties if you were really kind of negligent in your network security and your setup and the timing of notifying. And then there's kind of the legal obligations, right? So there's the third party coverage, which is liability coverage. So defense and indemnity, if any customers or consumers bring a claim against you, which typically, if there's enough people involved, kind of a couple hundred is really all you need. Some attorney sniffs around and they immediately file a lawsuit on behalf of everybody to try to get some sort of damages, and so they'll bring that claim for damages for those on behalf of those people. And so it defends and indemnifies you there, as well as against any sort of regulatory breach. And if you happen to have credit card information, there's also kind of things called PCI fines, penalties, and assessments when you lose that credit card information, which is kind of a whole nother angle on this. So it's kind of a holistic product that covers things like ransom payments and business interruption and the downtime. So it's meant to be that kind of holistic product that when you have some sort of event, kind of covers you from all angles.
Well, now I feel like I've been drinking from a fire hose. You ticked off an awful lot of different coverages there, which is good to know those are available. Can they be purchased sort of on a cafeteria basis where you take the certain ones about which you're most concerned, or are they mostly packaged policies?
Yeah, so it's a good question. It's typically not offered on a kind of a la carte basis where you can just buy and choose certain pieces of it. You may be able to buy different limits on some of the coverages, but holistically, most of the carriers that offer a kind of broad standalone product are going to give you a package policy with all those coverages baked in. There can certainly be within that policy and all those different coverages, there can be some different sublimits of coverage. And that's where you really need kind of an expert to advise you on the differences in these options, because a lot of times, you know, you could buy $1 million worth of coverage, but if there's different sublimits for critical coverages, you want to make sure you're aware of it, or you're aware enough to buy something that's robust enough in coverage that you're not, you know, getting something that you're not expecting.
One of the things about insurance that I do own and that I do have experience on, for instance, health insurance. One of the things I look to my insurance carrier to do, we're part of a PPO. So they pre-negotiate all the medical services that an old guy like me might come around needing as I advance in age. And I look at the explanation of benefits when they come through, and the hospital's charging $5,000 for something, and the daggum insurance company is paying $500. Good for them. Works for me, certainly. If you're not insured against cyber attacks, you're going to miss out on the expertise and the deal, basically. It seems like to me, having cyber insurance is insuring your at least damage control. Comment on that. How do insurers really help keep the cost down of an event?
Yeah, so it's a good analogy and a good kind of comment. I think, you know, when you're buying one of these policies, what you certainly get access to is a panel of experts, forensic firms, law firms, you kind of go down the list, PR firms, all the things that a business is going to need when they have some sort of event. And, you know, because you're working through a carrier, you're going to get the benefit of pre-negotiated rates that are going to be better than you would get off the street. You're also going to get a firm that's got a tight relationship with your insurance carrier, so they're used to working with them. So the process is going to be a little bit more seamless. And so a lot of times what we find is people that don't have coverage often go out on the street and they find a firm that really doesn't have that expertise, but says they can. And so then you're paying more because it takes them more time and effort to really figure out what they're doing. And you're kind of paying for them to learn on the fly on your job. So you don't want that. You really want to make sure that you've got access to all the experts that specifically do this all day, every day, and that they've all worked together. They've all worked with your carrier. It becomes a much more seamless process. Certainly then it's obviously you're getting the benefit of pre-negotiated rates, but also if you have coverage, obviously you're kind of paying up to your deductible and then the carrier's paying the rest. So that's obviously a huge difference once you've kind of put a policy in place. But at the end of the day, when you have an event, you really need to make sure that what you're buying is access to all these top vendors that are going to be available for you. Sometimes off the street, if you had a big event, it might not be as easy to get the kind of availability from the kind of key people that you want because they're really tied down by carriers and the breaches that are coming through that, you know, insurance kind of programs.
And while we were offline, you commented that most of the time, when you have a ransom demand, the timeline to react to it is very short. And I would think if I'm the bad guy, that's the only control I have over you is putting that pressure on you to do something fast. What if I get this call at 10:30 on Friday night? I'm insured. What are my resources? What are my options at that point?
Yeah, so we do see a lot of these types of events, intrusions, ransomware events do occur on a Friday afternoon, Friday evening. Certainly a lot of times over holiday weekends when they think everyone's going to be away and it's going to be even harder for you to deal with. And so, you know, if somebody's got a policy in place, typically as what comes with that is access to the law firms and the carrier, there's usually a hotline. And typically you can get, you know, 24/7 through this with the law firm that comes with their policy or their breach response services that come with the policy. You'll get access to somebody that you should be able to get a live person on the phone within an hour or so, right? And that's a huge difference. So that they can then work around the clock, around the weekend to try to either get you back up and running, figure out what's happened, figure out if you need to make a payment. You need the law firm to be working with the carrier to advise them on why you think you need to make a payment. Again, we're not necessarily advising that you should, but the law firm and the carrier would work with the insured on that. But should you need to execute something fairly quickly, you know, that can be happening. And by, you know, Sunday or Monday, you might've already kind of made a payment or figured out that you don't need to make a payment and you can recover otherwise. And so it's critical to have that and be able to kind of execute against it. And so getting access to a firm that's ready to deal with your breach when it does occur is a big difference than trying to figure it out with kind of nothing in place.
So you would appreciate an educated consumer is really the best kind of customer you can get. What kind of a request for proposal should a contractor put together or a small, medium business owner to go to his insurance broker, his carrier, or to go to Brian Thornton? This is what I'm looking for. What would that look like?
Yeah, I think certainly for people that are new buyers in the space, you want to make sure that you get more than one option, right? So you want to get a few different options for you to look at to figure out the differences in coverage, the difference in price points, the difference in a lot of value-add services come with the policy, and that used to be smaller. Now there's a lot more. A lot of the carriers are providing kind of throughout the policy period, they're monitoring your network. And when there's known vulnerabilities out there, like there was a big Microsoft Exchange vulnerability that Microsoft announced, what we saw was a lot of the carriers immediately then scanned every insured they had to see if they had that vulnerability and then notified the insureds, hey, you have this vulnerability. It's not turned into an event as far as we know yet, but we're going to help you fix it right away. Whether that's with your internal IT people or your third party kind of managed service provider that's managing your IT for you. And that's, you know, a big kind of value add from these policies. So when you're asking your broker for, hey, I want a quote, you know, they should be able to advise you on what the appropriate limits are, what the different options are, the differences in the coverages. You know, there's a lot to potentially answer when you go down all the different coverages and sub coverages and what they mean. So you want to make sure that you've got a few and that you've got a kind of full explanation to figure out which one's really the right one for me that's going to satisfy my needs. And so a lot of times for new buyers, even if they're kind of larger middle market buyers, you know, we recommend that if you've never purchased this before, at least look at $1 million worth of coverage because it's usually not that expensive. It's fairly broad in coverage and it gets you access to all those vendors out the gate. You know, you can look at it afterwards and say, you know, what are the appropriate limits? What are my peers at my size in this industry buy as far as limits to kind of compare yourself? But certainly you want to be able to, at a minimum, I think, get some coverage in place to make sure that you can afford that because that, again, gets you access to all those, all the expertise at the carrier level as well as all the vendors.
I'm going to give you another little analogy of an insurance product I'm familiar with, and that's auto insurance. Those insurance companies look at me and I've got, at least to this point, I'm not going to brag because that's dangerous. I've got a pretty good driving record, so I get pretty good rates. In those days of my youth when I had not such a great driving record from time to time, I didn't get such good rates. And based on my age and everything else, as I get older, I'm probably going to end up paying more because that's what happens. What kind of extra business expenses, extra cost and preparation am I going to have to get into? Because these insurance companies are going to look at me and my practices, I'm sure. What am I going to be up against when I do decide to launch a cyber insurance policy?
Yeah, I think historically there was a lot of competition in the small business space for cyber, and there still is. It's a healthy kind of competitive market. The kind of overall insurance cycle has turned to kind of a hardening market. There's been a lot of rate increases and restrictions and coverage in cyber. A lot of that effect has been more in the larger middle market and up space for the bigger businesses out there. But when we look in the small space, you know, typically with a limited amount of information, you're able to get proposals. The things they will look at are as far as your controls, and some of this is done through the application process. Some of this, they kick off security scans if you give them your URL and they're able to kind of see some information about you publicly. That they use to kind of automatically underwrite behind the scenes and often generate risk reports for you that say, hey, here's some things we've spotted or, hey, we've checked and you look really good beyond just the application, which I think is helpful, is, you know, you kind of get to this point where they're going to ask for certain controls, right? They're going to be looking at, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that small businesses can put in place that's going to help them in this process. Might not be required today, but it might be required by next year. And larger businesses, it will be required. And some of those things are multi-factor authentication at multiple levels, kind of access to your email, access, remote access to your network for kind of high valued credentialed users like the admin users, your IP folks. There's backup procedures, kind of having cloud-based or segregated backups is a critical thing that they're asking about and looking at, and you may or may not be able to get coverage. You may or may not get better rates if you have these things in place now, but more and more, these are going to be critical factors in getting coverage. And so it's driving small business insureds to ask more questions of their internal and external IT providers and start to kind of push and say, okay, we need to start doing more. Some other low-hanging fruit that just comes up very frequently is endpoint protection. Again, Les probably could comment on all these things as far as what they are and kind of cost points. The other thing is kind of secure email gateways, kind of separate spam filters that are kind of high-end spam filters to keep bad email from getting into your system, because again, that's kind of an open gateway for things to come in. And you know, if an employee is not paying attention, they can easily click on something that is going to cause cause damage to your business. So that's that. Those are some critical things. There's some others, but those are some things that are really getting asked and looked at on a regular basis for small businesses that they were never probably asked about before.
Yeah, Brian, I've helped a lot of our clients go through their renewals in the last couple of years. And what I've noticed in particularly the last 3 years is that insurance companies are starting to ask specific questions. And like you said, it's the low-hanging fruit, which, you know, hopefully everybody's covered, you know, and we make sure that we're, you know, we cover them as much as best as we can. But like you just said, multi-factor authentication is a question. It wasn't there the year before. Now it is. Do you encrypt your laptops? Do you encrypt your server? Do you have encrypted backups? Do you use virtual private networks that are encrypted? Do you have a intrusion prevention system on your firewall? Do you have a firewall? You know, there's a lot of questions there that small business owners don't even know how to answer because they're speaking a different language. So they call us up and they're like, hey, can you help with these 10 questions?
Yep.
Are you doing patching, regular patching? A lot of these questions didn't show up in 2018 or 2019, but they started showing up in 2020, and they're definitely showing up in 2021. And what I tell our clients is, if we can say yes to these things and they are implemented, your insurance rates will be lower. If you say, no, we don't do multi-factor authentication and you have the capability to do it, that would be bad for you because you're going to end up paying more money. You should be doing it anyway. So we recommend that to all of our clients, multi-factor authentication for Office 365, including connecting to your firewalls, you know, when you're remote. When the pandemic hit, that raised the dangers of human cyber risk like 1,000-fold, because you might have had a law firm that had 2 offices or 3 offices and 100 employees, and then that turned into 100 different offices everywhere because everybody went home. Well, the problem is you can't control what those people are doing at their homes. They might use their kid's laptop that doesn't have any antivirus, or
yep,
you know, doesn't you know, they're not using a VPN. Who knows what they're doing? It might already be infected, and then they connect to their network, and then infection spreads to the company's network. So it was a pretty frightening time for, I think, for a lot of people.
Well, yeah.
A lot of people in my industry, because we were trying to protect everybody as best we could. We knew what the danger was. I don't think small business owners really knew what the danger was.
Yeah, the pandemic certainly exacerbated exposures, especially for small businesses in moving remote quickly, right? They didn't have time to kind of work with their IT providers, internal or external, and say, hey, we need to vet each piece of hardware and put all the controls on it and then hand them something and say, this is now approved for kind of remote work. It was just log in everyone from home and just keep working. And so, yes, there kind of increased the kind of threat surface exponentially. And so, you know, that created a big challenge. And I think one of the other challenges just generally for small businesses, which should be applicable to everyone kind of out there, is, you know, a lot of times for small businesses, you're using a third party managed service provider. And a lot of times if that managed service provider, when they set them up kind of initially or when they first brought in, they want to add a bunch of these bells and not even bells and whistles, what we think is kind of standard security practices. And the client feels like they're being sold things they don't need, right? So they're kind of like, well, we don't need that. Like, just get us up and running with the basic stuff and we'll kind of look at it later. And they don't want to do it. So it feels like they're being sold something they shouldn't or don't need. Whereas we try to educate brokers and clients on all these things so that they're proactively asking their IT provider, hey, I've been told from a risk management perspective, we should have multi-factor. Can you do this for me? How much time is it going to take and how much is it going to cost? Yeah. And so those tend to be way more productive avenues once we educate the kind of small business, and that when they're asking, of course, the managed service provider says, yes, I can do that. Yes, I can get you a secure email gateway. Yes, we can make sure we have encryption. Yes, we can do it. It's all stuff that they can do. It's just a matter of making sure that the client's asking for it, as opposed to feeling like they're being sold. And then they immediately say, well, I don't think I need that. I'm not really sure.
Yeah. And if we always approach all of our clients with layered security. So, and the way I explain that to them, it starts with the firewall, and it goes all the way down to the end user, the endpoint security, antivirus, anti-malware. Make sure you have intrusion prevention systems, intrusion detection systems on your firewall, and that you have a firewall that's capable of those things. Have some user training, you know, have web blocking on the endpoints. By endpoints, I mean laptops and desktops. So if somebody clicks on a link accidentally and it was a bad one, at least you got a chance that the last defense there is going to be the web filter that's going to hopefully block that. But honestly, if there's a business owners out there that don't want to employ that, and we try to make them understand it, if they still don't want to do it, really, we did, I hate to say this, but we just don't want to have to do that. I mean, I don't want to have to deal with a company that's going to get hit, and I know they're going to get hit. At some point or another, they're going to get hit because they're skipping antivirus, or they're skipping web filtering, or they don't want to do backups.
Yeah, and it's tough. The one thing to add to that is, you know, a small businesses in the past thought, well, if I'm investing all this extra money in IT, then I should be saving money on my insurance. And that's true to a degree, but a lot of times what we're finding out is where they think they're kind of investing ahead of the curve is really just getting them to a base level of security that they should have, and it's the base level of expectations from carriers. So they feel like, oh, I spent all this extra money, I should be getting a discount. In reality, they're just kind of getting to the base level. And so, you know, we need to get them there. But the reality is also going to be that if they don't put some of these things in place now, like multi-factor, like endpoint protection, when their renewal comes up, they may not even be able to get coverage, which sounds crazy kind of from a year ago, that wouldn't have been the case. But certainly, as we've seen more and more ransomware claims, business interruption claims, social engineering related claims, you know, the tightening is there, that carriers are pushing hard on insureds to say, you need to get the controls in place to even be eligible for coverage.
And you may even be required to show that you have those controls in place. I mean, you know, I've been through those checklists, and you know, we're checking yes, because we know for our clients that those things are in place. I've also come across business owners that say, well, I'm just going to check yes. Well, okay, but if you do that and you don't have these things in place and an incident occurs, you can forget about coverage. The insurance policy is null and void at that point.
Yeah, exactly. It's got to be accurate. And that's a challenge sometimes for some of them to fill this out. But some of the security scans that are embedded in the underwriting process for some of the newer carriers that are deploying that technology does kind of fact check some of that stuff, and they can quickly see, no, you actually don't have a secure email gateway. You know, and some of that's if the insured's filling it out and they're not tech savvy and they're not using their third-party providers to kind of review that before they put it through. So some of these things do get caught.
Is that an agent that you install on the back end that can scan internally?
Or is that more of the kind of external looking in scan? So there's some things it won't be able to ever see, but there are certain things they can see, what kind of firewall they've got or what kind of email client they've got. Or, you know, you go down the list, they can see whether they've got a secure email gateway. There's a few other things they can see that mean they don't even have to ask the question in the application because they can tell instantly. And so those things, I think, as that evolves, will be more and more helpful in kind of getting an accurate look at a client, an accurate rate, and making sure everybody's comfortable with the risk.
And well, Brian, I'm going to steal one of Brian's line. I'll let him say it. I like you. He says it so well. It says it's, you're not the target as a small company, but your software is. And Brian can explain that.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times it's just, you know, people think, well, I'm not a target because I'm a small business, but it's usually not the small business specifically that's the target. It's the vulnerability and the software that they're using. And so the criminals are out there looking at known vulnerabilities and then scanning for businesses that have those vulnerabilities and then launching attacks at those vulnerabilities specifically. So it's less about targeting that individual company, but if they're using some out-of-date software that they didn't patch or something that there's a known vulnerability that they're not aware of yet, that's where kind of hackers are going and kind of launching, you know, a wide net against all those vulnerabilities to see who they can catch.
The bad guys are always going to go after the easy targets. I mean, it's the same with, you know, guys that are walking through neighborhoods and looking to burglarize a house. You know, they're looking for the window that's open or the door that's not locked. You know, if the doors are shut and locked and the windows are locked, it's not worth it. They're gonna find a house where there's a window open. Same thing with cyber criminals. They're looking for this 56% of small businesses that say they're not concerned with cyber attacks. There's the open
gentlemen, you've given us an awful lot to think about. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being here, Les, Brian, Bill. And the next time we are going to bring in one of our legal experts and we're going to start talking about some of the legal aspects of insurance and the whole realm of cybersecurity. So with that, I want to thank you. Jill, toss it back to you.
Thank you so much, Rick. And again, thank you, Les, Brian, and Bill, for your time today. I mean, this is something that every single small business needs to know about. And again, we really appreciate the insight. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to reach out to us at roofingcontractor.com, wconline.com, or buildingenclosureonline.com. And while you're there, make sure you sign up for our free e-newsletters, register for our website, which is free. Take a look at our new platform for our e-magazines that are incredible, because that's where we have all kinds of great content for you to read about. Also on our podcast page, you'll see all the podcasts for all the cybersecurity, which are so critical. And please stay safe and healthy. And we look forward to talking to you next time.